Good morning and welcome to Simply Economics. It's Tuesday, April 30th. On today's show, let behavioral economics solve the planet's crisis as we discuss the concept of climate nudge. Plus, the IMF warns of China overcapacity amid an improved economic outlook, and Bitcoin bravely resists economic and geopolitical pressures. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Economics. We start off with a landmark ruling from the Supreme Court of India, which has recognized that people have a right against the adverse effects of climate change, and that this right to a clean environment is necessary to articulate as a distinct right under the Rights to Equality and Life in the Indian Constitution. The court clearly spelled out that the right to health is impacted by factors that degrade the environment. For more on this ruling and its potential implications, we're joined now by our correspondent. So this is a major development in India's approach to climate change. What was the key reasoning behind the Supreme Court's decision here?
The court's ruling is indeed groundbreaking in establishing a constitutional right to be protected from the negative impacts of climate change. The justices drew a clear link between environmental degradation and infringement on fundamental rights like equality and the right to life, specifically the right to health. By articulating the right to a clean environment as a distinct right, the court is saying that the government has an obligation to safeguard citizens from the harms of climate change, just as it must protect other core rights. This framing opens the door to citizens challenging government actions or inaction on environmental issues as a violation of their constitutional rights.
That's a powerful legal tool for climate advocates. But of course, a court ruling alone won't solve the immense challenges posed by climate change. What else needs to happen to translate this judgment into meaningful action?
That's right. While this ruling provides important legal backing, a multi-pronged approach will be needed to drive real solutions. One intriguing idea put forward by some economists and policy experts is to combine the court's rights-based framing with insights from behavioral economics. Essentially, if the government has a duty to protect the right to a clean environment, it could use nudges and incentives to shape both individual behaviors and business practices in a more sustainable direction.
Can you give an example of what those nudges might look like in practice? How would behavioral economics come into play?
Sure. So behavioral economists have long observed that people don't always make rational decisions, even when they have good information. We're influenced by cognitive biases, social pressures, and choice architecture. Governments could use those insights to design policies that make the environmentally friendly choice the easy and desirable one. That could mean anything from making renewable energy the default option for utilities, to providing appealing incentives for consumers to buy electric vehicles or energy-efficient appliances, to using social proof to encourage conservation behaviors. The key is not to force people, but to thoughtfully steer them in a greener direction.
Thanks for the thought-provoking discussion on combining legal frameworks with economic tools to drive change. It will be interesting to see if India explores such solutions following the Supreme Court's landmark ruling on the right to a clean environment. Shifting our focus to another major economy in Asia, China's performance has exceeded expectations so far this year. But the country still faces significant risks that could impact the rest of the region, according to the International Monetary Fund. The IMF says overcapacity in China's manufacturing sector is a key concern. For more, we're joined now by our Simply Economics correspondent. What did the IMF have to say about China's economic outlook and the potential risks it poses to the region?
The IMF struck a cautiously optimistic tone on China's economy, noting that it has performed better than anticipated in 2023. However, the fund also highlighted several downside risks, with overcapacity in the manufacturing sector being a primary concern. China has long struggled with excess industrial capacity, particularly in sectors like steel, aluminum, and cement. This has led to overproduction, falling prices, and mounting debt among Chinese firms. The IMF warns that if left unchecked, this overcapacity could weigh on China's growth and have spillover effects on other Asian economies that are closely integrated with China through trade and investment links.
How significant is the risk posed by China's manufacturing overcapacity? Could it derail the country's economic recovery? And what would be the implications for the rest of Asia?
The risk is substantial, and it's one that Chinese policymakers have grappled with for years. Excess capacity saps industrial profits, increases debt levels, and makes the economy more vulnerable to external shocks. If the problem worsens, it could lead to a sharp slowdown in Chinese investment and consumption, which would have ripple effects across Asia, given China's economic heft and deep regional integration. Many Asian countries count China as their largest trading partner and a key source of demand for their exports. A slowdown in China would therefore be felt across factory floors and supply chains in the region. The IMF is urging China to accelerate reforms of state-owned enterprises and reduce subsidies to sectors with overcapacity to mitigate these risks.
Apart from the risks, the IMF also noted some upside potential for China's economy. What are the factors that could drive stronger than expected growth in China, and what would this mean for Asia?
The IMF says China's post-pandemic reopening has proceeded smoothly and provided a boost to consumer spending and services activity. This, along with policy support measures, has underpinned the better-than-expected performance so far this year. Looking ahead, the fund sees scope for China to beat its growth target of around 5% for 2023 if these positive dynamics are sustained. Stronger growth in China would provide a welcome lift to Asian economies at a time when growth in Western markets is slowing. It would support regional exports, tourism, and investment flows. However, the IMF cautions that China's recovery remains uneven, with the property sector still weak and private sector confidence fragile.
The IMF's assessment underscores the complex economic picture in China and the difficult balancing act facing policymakers as they try to shore up growth while also addressing deep-seated structural challenges. It's a reminder of just how consequential China's economic trajectory is, not only for the country itself, but for Asia and the global economy as a whole. On a related note, let's shift our focus to the world of cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin has once again proven its resilience as an asset, closing out the month of April with only a 10% decrease, despite facing significant geopolitical, economic, and fiscal pressures. Here with more details is our Simply Economics correspondent. So tell us, what were some of the key factors weighing on Bitcoin's price in April?
There were several major headwinds for Bitcoin this past month. First, the U.S. tax season led many American investors to liquidate their long Bitcoin positions in order to meet their annual tax obligations. This selling pressure was compounded by the U.S. government itself selling off nearly 2,000 Bitcoins in early April. Bitcoin also faced stiff competition from gold, which saw its price rise 15% over the last 3 months to levels not seen since the start of the coronavirus crisis. Persistent inflation fears and geopolitical tensions in the Middle East further weighed on market sentiment around Bitcoin.
And what about the upcoming Bitcoin halving event? How has that impacted the cryptocurrency's short-term outlook?
The uncertainty around the impact of the halving on Bitcoin mining profitability and cost structures has definitely contributed to the crypto's recent volatility. This is on top of a notable decrease in inflows to Bitcoin ETFs, signaling some wariness from institutional investors. However, given all of these significant pressures, many analysts believe the fact that Bitcoin only declined 10% in April after 7 straight months of gains is a sign that the market has reached a new level of maturity. With the cryptocurrency currently trading below $63,000, some believe it is undervalued at these levels and poised for an upside surprise.
Thanks for that analysis on Bitcoin's resilience amidst competing factors. Shifting gears to the European economy, a new report on European competitiveness is set to be released by former European Central Bank President Mario Draghi. The report is expected to take a systemic look at underlying productivity issues. Here with more details is our economics correspondent. So what can we expect this report to focus on in terms of boosting Europe's competitiveness?
The Draghi report will likely emphasize that competitiveness fundamentally comes down to productivity, how efficiently an economy combines labor, capital, and technology to produce goods and services. This is rooted in the neoclassical growth model pioneered by economist Robert Solow back in the 1950s. Solow, who passed away last December at age 99, showed that long-run economic growth is driven by increases in factor inputs like labor and capital, but even more importantly, by productivity gains that allow you to get more output from those inputs.
Solow was a towering figure in growth economics. What were some of his key insights that still shape how we think about these issues today?
Solow's work really highlighted the critical role of technological progress and innovation in driving productivity and living standards higher over time. In fact, he estimated that over 80% of the growth in U.S. output per worker during the first half of the 20th century came from productivity gains rather than just amassing more capital and labor. So while adding more inputs is important, it's really that total factor productivity, reflecting technology and efficiency, that makes the biggest difference. Those productivity gains are what allow real wages and prosperity to rise.
But despite the benefits, Solow himself acknowledged some of the costs and trade-offs involved with that productivity-driven growth, right?
Yes. In interviews late in his life, Solow noted that the incredible productivity boom of the last century also contributed to many of the environmental and climate problems we face today. He argued the focus needs to shift from just maximizing conventional GDP and productivity metrics to broader measures of economic well-being and sustainability. Similarly, economist Nicholas Stern recently made the case that we have a moral obligation to future generations to rethink the growth model. The idea is that economic policy can't be divorced from social values.
So in that context, what's your sense of how the Draghi Report may define competitiveness and the key priorities for boosting it in Europe?
I expect it will emphasize that European competitiveness depends on putting in place the conditions for a productivity revival. Things like investing in human capital and skills, boosting research and innovation, reducing barriers in product and labor markets, and improving both physical and digital infrastructure. But it may also stress that growth needs to be made more inclusive and sustainable. The EU has already embraced the general idea of beyond GDP in programs like its European Green Deal. The challenge is translating that into specific policies and metrics to guide decision-making.
It will be interesting to see how Draghi threads that needle between traditional growth policies and an updated vision of competitiveness. Thanks for the insights. We'll continue to follow the rollout and reception of the report in the coming days and weeks. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Economics. We'll see you back here tomorrow.